welcome to your May 4th Committee on Rules. We are a bit short-handed. We're officially in subcommittee. We're a little rummy. We were here quite late last night. I am going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1052 and ask the committee administrator to tell us about the bill. And Representative Barker, why don't you come to the dais?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 1052 authorizes the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training to appoint and commission humane special agents.
Representative Barker, take it away.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And just to identify myself, I'm Representative Jeff Barker, and I represent the Beaverton Low area. Humane special agents serve a vital role in responding to reports of animal abuse and neglect, collecting evidence, providing testimony in court, and acting as a resource to law enforcement entities around the state regarding the area of animal welfare. They respond to hundreds of calls a year, and having been a police officer for many, many years, regular officers just don't have the expertise that's needed in these cases, and these people fulfill that role. I went and spoke with John Minnis, who's the head of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, and he said they already train these people. That the Humane Society of Oregon, which is important to note, this is not the U.S. Humane Society, pays for all the training, and this would move the special agents who are commissioned by the governor under an obscure statute. This moves them under the DPSST, where it more appropriately belongs. And the Humane Society, as I said, currently amasses all costs related to the training and employment of the officers. And the Oregon Humane Society currently assumes all legal liability for the agent's activities, and that would not change with this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd ask my committee if there are any questions, but they're not here, so. Appreciate.
I can answer those. Thank you very much.
Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
Mr. Campbell, Lieutenant Covey, Sharon Harmon. If you have written testimony, we'd ask for you to submit it. If you are in agreement with the prior testimony, I'd ask you to state it for the record. And if you have any differing views or points we should consider, please add that.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm the Governor's Senior Policy Advisor, and we're here in support of Senate Bill 1052. I do understand that the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training is working on some changes to the language to better fit what their needs are. The real bottom line here is that right now this program is administered through the Governor's Office. We don't really have the expertise or the staff to do this properly, and it is a much better fit under the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, who already has this responsibility. So this bill really treats this particular program much more effectively, efficiently, and appropriately. And so as a result, the governor's office is in support of the bill.
Great. Thank you. Lieutenant Covey?
Madam Chairman of the committee, would be here. Appreciate your time. The case has been very well stated by the previous two people, and I appreciate that. We have submitted written testimony, and I appreciate your time in reading that. I just want to highlight the fact, as an example, that over the last 10 years, Oregon Humane Society special agents have investigated over 11,000 animal welfare concerns. I think that one statistic highlights the burden that we take off of the regularly constituted law enforcement officers, and Mr. Campbell is correct in stating that this is not something new. It's something that we simply want to continue in a more appropriate forum and have it be regulated by our agency and by the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training.
Thank you. Ms. Harmon, good afternoon and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee.
And we're officially in full committee at this point.
Well, glad to hear that. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Humane Society, which is the state's largest and oldest humane society. In fact, we're the third oldest humane society in the country. We have been providing animal welfare investigations, animal sheltering, and assorted other animal-related services to this community, and meaning the state of Oregon, since 1868. Our law enforcement involvement probably began in the late 1800s, and we've continued continue that today, providing these services at no cost to the state of Oregon. We view our role as to provide expertise, to provide training to other other communities, so that no one entity shares the burden. We've been doing this for a long time. I think we do it very well. I think the community is well served by our efforts, and this bill just represents letting us continue to do that in a way that spells out who does what, when, and how qualified they may be to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Harmon, I have document dated May 5th, conceptual amendments.
Yes.
Have they been drafted?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, no, not at this time.
We will request
the work session to deal with those.
All right. We'll get them drafted and bring it back for work session.
Thank you.
And it sounds like everyone's in agreement in the proposed amendments. We'll get them in a manner, in a form that anybody can agree to them. Thank you. Ms. Lawrence? Thanks.
You can say that.
Hi, good afternoon.
For the record, my name is Marilyn Lawrence. I supervise the certification and records function for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Chair Brown and members of the committee, the scope of the department's interest in Senate Bill 1052 is related to our ability to implement the bill's provisions with current staff and budgetary resources. We had some concerns with the technical ways that the original Senate bill was drafted, have worked very positively and cooperatively with the bill's proponents. We have been discussing conceptual amendments, and With the amendments that I think are before you in conceptual form, DPSST is very comfortable that we would be able to implement the provisions with current staffing and budgetary resources.
Okay, great. Any questions for Ms. Lawrence?
Lawrence,
at accent on the other syllable. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing. We'll have committee staff request amendments, and we'll bring that back as soon as the amendments are done. I am going to... HJR 32 is... Open a public hearing on HJR 32. Invite Representative Vocking forward and ask Ms. Harris to tell us about the proposal.
This is a RIP bill.
Madam Chair, House JR 32 requires the legislative administrator to determine an appropriate location within the Capitol for building a Capitol History Center.
Representative Avakian, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Brown. I appreciate you hearing this bill today, and if you move to work session, I appreciate that. Yes, the bill was described quite well, and just in case you move this out of committee and I don't have the chance on your floor to thank President Courtney, I thank him for his co-sponsorship and Senator Atkinson as well. This bill has no fiscal to it. It simply starts a process for picking a place within the Capitol to establish a Capitol History Center. We have about 350,000 people a year that walk through the steps and that come into the building but really have no place to go to learn a little bit about the Capitol's history and about Oregon history. At the same time, we have got wonderful artifacts and documents throughout the city and the state that have no place for display. And without burdening your time too much, I want to tell you just a short story to indicate what I mean by that. Several weeks ago, I took a walk that I would encourage all of you to take a few blocks up the Capitol Mall to our State Archives building. And I went up there for a specific purpose and was glad that I got to see it. Roy Turnbaugh, our State Archivist, knew, and took me to their back room where they keep all of the historical documents of the state, including things like what we're doing here today. But you walk to the back of this room, and there is a shelf, and on that shelf is a box that looks much like one you'd have in your garage. And he says, here, I want to show you. And he pulls the top off the box, and he reaches down and pulls out a leather-bound volume and says, here, take a look at this. And so I, of course, grab it and open it. And it's the original Oregon Constitution.
Oh, wow.
Which they are taking very, very good care of, but which is sitting in a box in the back of a room
and nobody ever sees it. And next to that box is another one with a label on it, Territorial Documents. And you pull that down and open it up, and it's the Scribner's notes of the Territorial Convention as it was occurring, that simply sit in a box in a room, covered up, never shared with Oregonians. And next to that box were the personal diaries of Joseph Meek. And it goes on and on and on. And I just think it would be a wonderful thing and a great legacy for this session to establish a place in this building where those great treasures of Oregon can be displayed for Oregonians. And so I would appreciate very much if you would pass this bill out and we could get on with the task.
Thank you, Representative Bakken. We appreciate you bringing this issue before us.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I'm going to the archives next week.
Are you done with your assigned task, Senator Ringo?
No, because I'm here.
Okay. Well,
you can watch me. I'll watch you. We'll go together.
Okay.
Keep us out of trouble.
Any questions?
I have nothing to do with the conspiracy behind the dais right now. Just want that clear.
Everybody has everything to do with the conspiracy. I don't trust you.
I have a plan. Yes. While they're over at archives, we could convert their offices into the history center.
Okay. With that, we're going to close the public hearing.
Fine.
We're ready for work session.
Yeah.
I'm going to open a work session on HGR 32, Adam, Senator Atkinson.
I would just be thrilled to move House Joint Resolution 32 to the floor with a do-adopt recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved HGR 32 to the Senate floor with a do-adopt recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. And Senator Atkinson, we'd love to have you carry as long as you give us a history lesson on the Senate floor.
Have I ever let you down?
Brief.
You have, well, I can name a few times, but this, I hope, is not one of them. I'm going to open a public hearing on SM1. I actually need the list. And I'm waiting for a signal from the Senate President's Office on House Bill 2005. I want to move that quickly. So, Senate Memorial 1, thank you. Rick Bennett, Verna Porter, and Tim Nesbitt, come on up. Okay. All right. I'm sorry, I got the wrong list. Can I get two of you to step aside so I can have representatives from Hooley and Blumenauer to come forward? I'm sorry. I actually didn't see one of them in the audience, so. Yeah, don't go far, Ms. Porter. Yes.
Okay,
thanks. Yes. Hi.
Hi. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Willie Smith with Congressman Earl Blumenauer's office and also a Portland resident. The Congressman has submitted a letter for the record that we have, and I won't read it, but I'll just make... Yeah, I know. Vera, you were here late last night. Just make three quick points that I think are somehow getting overlooked. First, we'd like to thank you for opening a dialogue on Social Security issue and, more importantly, the President's plan to privatize it. It's a discussion that we need to have on Social Security, and we need to have it at all levels of government, not just at the federal level, but it will affect states, counties, cities, nonprofits, church organizations as we look at benefits being cut in the future. Just two quick points. One we'd like to make is, I think it's important to remember there is no immediate crisis, contrary to what some would say. Even if we do nothing at all with Social Security, we don't raise taxes, we don't cut benefits, we do nothing. In 2052, the Social Security Administration will still be able to pay 78% of the benefits that people were promised. And that actually is a lot better than some of the analysis being done on the President's plan. And the second is that any privatization attempt, because of the cost, will deplete the Social Security Trust Fund 20 years earlier than, again, if we did nothing. So those are the only two points I'd like to make, and just thank you for having this hearing.
Thank you. Mr. Is it Brower?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Travis Brower. I'm District Co-Director for Congresswoman Darlene Hooley here in Salem. And like Mr. Smith, I wanted to thank you for giving Oregonians the opportunity to participate in this important national dialogue. As we're considering changes to this program, probably the most successful program in our nation's history, it's very important that everyone have the opportunity to weigh in and to have a good, thoughtful public discussion on this issue. Like Mr. Smith, I won't read the letter that Congressman Hooley has submitted for the record, but I did want to express Congressman Hooley's strong opposition to privatization of Social Security and make several points regarding that. First off, even President Bush has now conceded that Social Security privatization by itself would do nothing to solve Social Security's solvency problems. The solvency that would be gained under the President's plan would be done through very major benefit cuts. Second of all, private accounts would hasten the financial shortfall that Social Security faces because it would divert significant amounts of tax money into these private accounts. And we would still need to continue to pay current benefits. Since the President has ruled out a tax increase, all projections are that that would have to be done by borrowing. The borrowing projected under the President's privatization plan would amount to up to $6 trillion over the first two decades of the plan. I think it was Senator Dirksen who said $1 billion here, $1 billion there, and pretty soon you're talking about real money. Well, now we're talking in terms of trillions of dollars. That would be added onto our existing national debt, which is at record highs. So I wanted to thank you for this opportunity to consider these points.
Thank you. Questions? Appreciate your Congress people's leadership on this issue, and we knew you're from Congressman Blumenauer's office by your little bicycle. Very cute. Thank you. Okay, let's try that again. Mr. Bennett, Mr. Nesbitt, and Ms. Porter, come on forward. Thanks for your patience, and I'm sorry. Whoever wants to start.
Chairman Brown, members of the committee, for the record, Rick Bennett, representing AARP Oregon. We're here to support the Senate Memorial Number 1. I would hope that based on our TV ads, newspaper ads, our publications, our materials which I've provided to the committee, that you would be aware that we're opposed to private accounts that are created by diverting payroll contributions from the trust fund. We certainly believe that the trust fund needs to be strengthened, but we're talking about the long-term solvency of the trust fund. And private accounts created by the diverting of payroll taxes does nothing to improve the solvency of the program. In addition to that, there is the transition involved with continuing to pay benefits while you're diverting these funds. And that means, in all likelihood, apparently from what we hear, tremendous borrowing, which will increase the national debt considerably, trillions of dollars, over the next 10, 20, 30 years. So in addition to worsening the solvency incurring trillions of dollars in debt, what do you get? You've substituted social insurance guarantee with a market risk, you've transferred a shared risk to the individual, and you've punched a hole in a safety net for retirees, survivors, and the disabled. Social Security does need to be strengthened, and there are a number of options available to do that without radically changing the program. By making sensible choices now, we can honor our obligations to all generations. And if you have any questions, be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Mrs. Porter.
Thank you, Chairman Brown, Senator Shields. I'm Verna Porter. I'm Alliance for Retired Americans and an ILWU member. And I'm not going to do numbers. I guess I'm going to talk as a retiree. I was born the same year Social Security was. Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed that document just 3 months or four after I was born. My entire life, this has not been a pension plan. This has been an insurance policy. Most of us in this country, we've gone through all different kinds of financial ups and downs, I remember more of them than you do, that always there, if everything else failed, we still had our Social Security. It was a contract this government made with its citizens. It isn't a retirement plan. It's something our disabled are looked after when something happens to them. The juveniles, the children of people who die an untimely death are cared for in this country. These things, to me, make this country what it is. Privatization very likely will destroy that. It will certainly cut back on the benefits that will be received. I said I'm not going to go into statistics, but I asked which one would be most important for me to point out. And what both of my companions here said is the one that states that nearly half of the senior citizens, or 47%, would live in absolute poverty if it were not for Social Security. That's a big number. I would like to also add, and then I'm finished, I, of course, am a mother and a grandmother, and this is an intergenerational thing. My baby boomer kids, I'm concerned about them, but I'm not nearly as concerned as I am for my grandchildren. I urge you to back this memorial and let everyone know that we are opposed to privatization because it will ruin what isn't that bad. A policy, a Social Security, has been working pretty well. It can be fixed without ruining it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Brown and Senator Shields, I'm Tim Nesbitt, president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, representing 108,000 working men and women of the unions in Oregon and 20,000 retired union members. I have lengthy testimony, which I've submitted in writing. I'll be brief. In fact, I'll accept a challenge from someone before I came up here who said, can I tell you anything you don't already know about the Social Security issue? So I'm going to offer to tell you at least three things you don't know, and you can stop me when you've heard the third. And that way we'll testimony. But first of all, I want to start with what the president said and did on April 6th when he opened a file cabinet drawer in a, I think it was called the Office of Federal Debt in West Virginia, and pointed to the stack of U.S. Treasury bonds that were raised, that were issued with the full faith and credit of our United States Treasury Department and government, intended to secure the future benefits of the Social Security program for all of us who are not yet retired. He called them just IOUs, implying that they were not worth the paper they're written on. I actually attached a copy of one of those so-called IOUs. These are actual Treasury bonds. Their interest averages about 5.7% a year. Those bonds were paid for with our money. And I want to remind all of us who've been working for several decades or more that it was way back in 1983 that Congress and President Reagan agreed to raise the Social Security tax rate. The full increase didn't take effect until 1990. But since 1990, all of us have been paying not just for our parents' retirement benefits and the disability and survivor benefits of the Social Security program, but for our own. We've been pre-funding this program. 10 cents of every dollar we've been paying from our paychecks since 1990 has been going in to pre-fund our benefits, and that's what those bonds represent. $1.7 trillion worth of those bonds being held to secure our benefits in the future. And it's because of those bonds that we're not going to run out of money in 2017, as the president says. We're going to continue to see the trust fund grow until at least 2027 or longer, and we're going to have enough money to pay a dollar for a dollar of benefits until the middle of this century. That's why we so resent the president's sounding the alarm and misleading and scaring people about the security, not only of the benefits, but about the security of the promise made to us to repay the money, which we've already paid, to secure our benefits. Have I gotten to 3 points yet? So I just want to call attention to what Senate Memorial 1 says in summary. Keep the promise. Do no harm. As Rick says, privatizing the benefits will make the problems worse. And work on real reforms that will strengthen what's really the most successful social program in our country. We urge you to send that message to Congress by passing Senate Memorial 1. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Shields?
Yeah, Rick, a question. AARP is pretty nonpartisan, isn't it?
We are nonpartisan.
Yes. You've been an advocate for Social Security for a long time. You're nonpartisan. Is this issue pretty nonpartisan? I mean, I know the president is in one party and I'm in another, granted. But how's it going out there? I mean, I've noticed a lot of Congress is not real thrilled with this proposal.
Well, we
Rick Bennett for the record. We come to all issues being considered, whether at the federal or state level, in a nonpartisan way. And we look at the issues, the pros and cons. We look at the policies that we've developed and so forth. We just don't look at it as a Democratic or Republican mm-hmm. issue. And frankly, our membership is probably 50-50 as far as political party affiliation. That's not information that we collect. Right. But I can tell you that we have almost 36 million members nationwide and 460,000 members in Oregon. I'm not going to tell you that 100% of those members support our position, but the overwhelming majority of them, by far, do support our position on this.
Paul?
Sure.
I would suggest that's probably reflected in Congress itself. I mean, like I said, I know the president is Republican. But it seems to me that there are a lot of Republican congressmen that aren't real thrilled about this as well. Is that not?
I think there's some hesitancy there. Yes, but we have been willing to speak with the president about the Social Security issues, members in both parties in Congress and so forth. But that conversation starts with the position that we are opposed to diverting funds to create these private accounts. Now, there are other options available for, you know, you solve the solvency problem by either increasing revenue coming into the trust fund, reducing benefits, or a combination of those. And there are a number of options available to do that. Now, we have been on the record as supporting some of those options. We have concerns about others, but we're open to that discussion, but it does not involve privatization of the trust fund.
Well, final question. I have been a member of AARP for over 10 years. I hate to say that.
I didn't know you were old enough.
Senator Brown.
Well, you can actually be an associate member before you're age 50, so perhaps you joined early.
Yes. Senator Brown, you could do that.
It's all right. I'll wait. It's coming soon enough.
I did it cheap. I got a 10-year membership, but it really cheap a while back, and I can never pass up a bargain. That's why I joined so early.
Man.
Well, you know, it's just the way it goes. But my question, based on membership, I look askance at articles I've seen in some magazines and so on that question the integrity of AARP around this issue. And why the attacks?
Well, I think... if your message is very effective and you have difficulty competing with that message, you attack the messenger. I think our position related to private accounts has been misrepresented, suggesting that we're against the privatization privatization related to Social Security, but on the other hand, we make available to our members opportunities related to mutual funds. The reality is, and it's very consistent with our policy and the way we operate, we feel that Social Security is a safety net. It's a guaranteed benefit. It can't be outlived, and we need to protect that. Now, in addition to that, people should be saving and investing extra dollars, but that is in addition to Social Security. And that is our position. It always has been. We've been very supportive of other things such as individual retirement accounts and 401k plans and so forth, and we'll continue to be. But that's in addition to Social Security, not in place of.
Thank you, Senator Shields. Thank you all very much. Next up, Jim Greer, Ed Yoon, and Ken Jackson. I need to step out for a minute.
Oh, goody.
I need to step out for a minute. Senator Shields will take good
that
care of you.
Be
right
back. That doesn't mean we're going to slow down any, okay?
Right. That wasn't true from last night, Senator Shields.
Go ahead.
Senator Shields, my name is Jim Greer. I live here in Salem. I have been in industrial finance for over 40 years in positions of corporate controller to chief financial officer. I am here today to speak on behalf of America's middle class. I'm a proud member of the middle class. Most of the people in this room are probably middle class. In fact, all of you esteemed senators may be middle class too. There are a lot of us out here. You would think, with so many middle-class Americans counting on our Social Security benefits for our retirement, that our opinions would be the ones that the people in Washington, D.C. would be listening to closest. Yet, just the opposite seems to be true. Last Thursday, President Bush rolled out more details of his Social Security privatization plan. The plan relies on gutting Social Security for the middle class. Under the Bush plan, when I retire, I will be among the 70% of workers who will face reductions in my Social Security benefit. And those reductions will go steeper over time, so things will even be worse for those coming after me. According to an analysis from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a worker who retires in 2075, having earned an income equal to today's average, would face a 28% reduction compared to benefits they would have earned through the current system. Those earning only slightly more, the equivalent of around $60,000 in today's dollars, would face steeper cuts. Benefit reductions for average workers would be the steepest in the history of Social Security. Add to that the specter of private accounts. So, once again, the middle class will be bearing the burden. And combined with private accounts, the new Bush system will ensure that many middle class Americans will receive little, if any, benefit from Social Security. That is why I am so relieved that the Oregon Senate is taking up this issue and sending the message to Washington, D.C. that Oregonians like me do not support privatizing Social Security. We must stand together to protect Social Security now and for the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Shields. For the record, my name is Ed Yoon, and I'm the director of Oregon United to Protect Social Security, which is a newly formed nonpartisan state coalition of various membership and citizens groups united to protect Social Security from the President Bush's scheme to replace it with the risky privatized system. I will not talk about the reasons for or against. What I will talk about is some of the activities that we have in plan, and I'm going to be urging you to help pass this important Senate memorial. In the coming weeks and months, Oregon United to Protect Social Security will be aggressively pursuing grassroots and media tactics aimed at urging public officials at all levels of government to firmly and publicly oppose the President's plan to privatize Social Security. Oregon United will also let Oregonians know which of our elected officials represent the President on his terrible plan to privatize Social Security and drastically cut guaranteed benefits for the middle class that will put thousands of current and future Oregonian retirees at risk. And we will let Oregonians know which of our elected officials share the viewpoint and value of the overwhelming majority of Oregonians to oppose this terrible plan. I urge you to help pass this important Senate memorial opposing privatization of Social Security. That's going to send a clear message, clear and loud message to President Bush and his pro-privatization allies in Congress that Oregon is united to protect Social Security. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Senator Shields, my name is Ken Jackson. I'm a retired Navy Chief Petty Officer. I retired in 1974. I immigrated to Tahiti, where I make my home. I was born in Oregon, bred in Oregon, and I will die an Oregonian. But I have seen the problems going around. My brother-in-law retired several years ago from Publisher's Paper. When he became 65, he lost over half of his pension because he received Social Security. The Social Security between him and my sister are what are supporting them today. If we let this go, I will have nephews and nieces who, under them, will lose those benefits and may not have anything at all. Most of us, myself being retired, I have my Navy pension and Social Security. That's all I have. If I lose any of that, I'm on the street. So that's about all I've got to say. I thank you. I never expected to be called here. And I will report, I'm here taking care of my mom.
Right.
I go home for 3 months, but I come up here and I spend 9 months. Of those 9 months, I'm home, and the internet is my home. You will find me on Tom Hartman's chat room. You'll find me on Buzzflash. You'll find me on Truthout. You will find me throughout the internet, and I am 100% behind the non-privatization of Social Security as it is issued or offered today. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Thank all of you. Appreciate your input. I have two more people here, Jim Davis and Ruth Curry. Welcome, Jim. Glad you're here.
Thank you. Senator Shields.
I don't know where my committee's going. I just
That's fine. I'll just summarize just a few points. I've handed in a testimony. I'm Jim Davis, representing the Oregon Association for Retired Citizens and United Seniors of Oregon, state affiliates of the National Council on Aging and the National Coalition of Consumer Organizations. I also am very involved with the Gray Panthers and would represent them on this issue. We strongly urge you to support Senate Memorial 1 and to strongly state the opposition to the implementation and privatization of the Social Security system, which is a defined benefit security program where all workers contribute and deserve their retirement benefits. You know, we're very disturbed over discussion that Social Security is on the brink of bankruptcy and there's some amazing crisis. We simply don't see it, and the data presented to you show that, you know, for the next close to 50 years, the system will pay at full levels. It's really when the boomers come into the system and start to tax that system a bit that you're going to see that they're going to have to start going into the reserves at a certain point. But it's very obvious to us that with very minor tweaks in the system, particularly in raising the income cap for payroll tax, which is currently at $90,000, by raising that at certain incremental levels, you can pretty much solve this problem. And certainly privatization is not an answer. And what concerns us, as has already been stated, is that through privatization, you're going to cause trillions of dollars in national debt, which ultimately will be translated into cuts in the federal budget, which could mean cuts in key human services programs. What we see really is that Wall Street and large financial investment firms are the ones that will stand to benefit nicely from the privatization of Social Security. And we can't see too many other benefits to this. The fact is that there already are investment opportunities for retirees. You don't have to privatize Social Security to do that. But those that would be taking advantage of these investment opportunities are usually the higher income retiree. The lower and middle income retirees have limited investment opportunities, and this really wouldn't provide a very good option for them. So we see really few people truly benefiting from this proposal. I might make one other point. The Social Security deficit over the next 75 years is estimated to be about $3.7 trillion, which would be about a third of what it would cost if the president were to get his wish to make permanent his 2001-2003 tax cut, which primarily benefits the very wealthy. So it really doesn't make a lot of sense to us why you would want to put our economy in that kind of jeopardy. Citizens and advocates and seniors have been letting their voices be heard in opposition to the privatization of the Social Security system since the 1990s. We've been fighting on this issue for a long time. And we see that there seems to be very few viable arguments in putting our beloved beneficiary program at risk to provide additional retirement investment opportunities that would benefit a minority of future beneficiaries. We strongly urge your support of Senate Memorial 1 in opposition to the privatization of Social Security.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Ruth Curry, and thank you,
Senator Brown and Senator Shields for holding this hearing. I'm concurring with almost everything that's been said about this. I'm representing the Portland chapter of the Older Women's League and the national organization. When I'm a charter member of the national organization, and when it was founded in October of 1980, guess who was running for president? Ronald Reagan was, and his top priority was privatization of Social Security. And it has never gone away from the top of our agenda to try to save. We are a midlife and older women's league. We're not old ladies with gray hair like mine. We're concerned about the many problems that hit women as they are growing older. And many of these women are working at the jobs of 70 cents to the man's dollar. Many times they're working two jobs, so they're not able to save, and this will really be a disaster for women in particular. So that's all I have to say. I concur with Jim.
Thank you, Ms. Curry. It's great to see you. It's depressing that the dollar, the amount that women earn per man is going down instead of going up. It's very frustrating. First time, yeah. Anybody else wishing to testify in this measure? I have Ruth Shep. Come on up. Ruth, come on. I'm sorry, Ruth Shepherd. We're not usually blessed with this many Ruths.
If they weren't here, we might be considered ruthless.
Chairman,
that just occurred to me. I mean,
pretty good,
Chairman Brown.
Things were quite dull when Senator Shields was out ill.
Senator Shields just stole my line. You had troubles enough without being called names. Thanks for this chance to talk about it. The subject deserves a good national dialogue, and you're maybe like I am. We can't figure out how to conduct a good national dialogue any longer. And something that's so much at the root of things. Mm-hmm. We thank you very much for this effort and for resolutions for what they're worth. But we've got to find a way to deal with it in another way than we're doing. This isn't just a fight between older people and those from high places who would change the Social Security drastically. And I have just a couple of comments and a question for the younger people in the audience, all younger Americans. It stems partly from my own personal experience, which I found out later. I was like everybody else, but I didn't realize that. In 1935, I was 10 years old and listened to the president and his fireside chats on the floor of a small room in my father's house where we lived, the size of the family. And in that room lived my mother's mother and her grandmother. Mm. And so I had a great advantage of being in a four-generation family. And being 10 years old, that's not a bad situation. And it turned out well with me. But the stress and the other issues that I didn't realize at that time were multiple. So I asked the younger people in the audience if they've been thinking maybe that they'd like their mother-in-law to come and live with them. And
I would. There is no question in my mind. I would, like, pay her money to come live with us. So I'm probably unusual, though.
This has nothing to do with whether you like or not, Senator Brown. This has nothing to do with whether you like or don't like your mother-in-law. It's a fact that young people now who are working to get those kids to college, who are working two jobs, the whole business about the middle generation, maybe mostly of them are strained to the hilt on their payments for the house. Wondering where they can save to do this or that, much less for their old age. And then there's no choice but to accept an older person for whom you feel responsible into the family. I don't think young people understand that there was a huge societal change when Social Security came along in 1935. And it gave those mother-in-laws and the whole group of other older people that had some dependencies, it gave them the opportunity to live in dignity in their own place. And that was a huge change, and it will be threatened, no question about it, if we fool with the Social Security payments and push them back. I think also it's fair to say that the struggles that are happening now across the country on financing long-term care, which are bad enough and have caught up with us and we're sort of like in the hole, those things can only increase with the increased population. And the burden on the state funds and the federal funds, it can be predicted, even if you suppress by as much as you can what the definition of needy and poor is. So what you have to ask younger people is, what will they be doing from the taxpayer's standpoint, and what will they be saying about where the money comes from to care for the older people? It's pesky turning 80, and it is nonetheless encouraging to know that all of us have that kind of pesky habit of aging every minute or two. And it's the young people that ought to be in this dialogue. And I don't know what you can do, but I would certainly urge us to think seriously about a better way to speak about these issues.
Thank you, Ms. Shepherd. Questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to testify? Come on up.
My name is Kim Brosh, and I came here to listen, actually, and just show my support for the Senate Memorial. But since there aren't too many younger people testifying, and I'm not really that young, but I haven't got my ARP letter yet, I just want to say that when this idea first came forward from the president, I immediately understood that money would be lost to the investors investing our funds, because anytime you invest money to an investor, they take a huge chunk of that just to fund their investing research and expertise. The way the government runs now is that it's all handled internally, and we don't have those kind of fees. So I prefer not to pay extra fees to Wall Street, because I'm just not that fond of Wall Street anyway. So I support Senate Memorial 1.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? Okay. We're going to close the public hearing and move into work session. Chair would move SM1 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none. So ordered. Senator Shields, why don't you carry? Chair would open a work session on House Bill 2005. The chair would move to rescind the referral to Ways and Means. Any discussion to that motion? Any objection to that motion? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Chair would move House Bill 2005 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection to the motion? So ordered, and I'll carry House Bill 2005. Any other business to come before the Senate today? We did 1052. We've got amendments on 1052. We did the Senate Bill 1. We did 2005. We already did HR 32. We're done. We're adjourned.
The committee's taking a lot of time lately.